Well, the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. And the faker's gonna fake, 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 baby. I'm just gonna make, 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 make. Making luck, making luck.
A Dominion Podcast.
Welcome to this episode of Making Luck, a Dominion Podcast. Notice that I said episode. That is an episode because this episode is going to be full of content about that card that just fills your veins with adrenaline, gets you pumped. Cultist? Cultist. So Cultist is a 5-cost action attack looter from the Dark Ages expansion, and it reads, each other player gains a ruins. You may play a cultist from your hand. And there's a big horizontal line, and below the line it says, when you trash this, plus 3 cards. So I guess we should start with a potential rules clarification. The part where it says you may play a cultist from your hand, basically that means you get to play a cultist from your hand without needing to spend an action on it. So, right, if I start my turn with 1 action from my turn, and I can play a cultist, and then I can play another cultist that's in my hand. And that one lets me play another cultist from my hand. And that one lets me play another cultist from my hand, etc., 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 right? So normally, because it's a terminal, you'd only be able to play 1. But because there's this line of text on cultist, you can play more of them, right? If you play a village, you can play a village. You have 2 actions left because you played the village. Then you play a cultist, and you can play 5 more cultists, whatever. And you still have 1 action left afterwards. So, okay. Strategically, I'm not going to comment in saying that that's good, but rules-wise, that's how it works. Strategically, I am going to comment on it, just not right now. We're going to start, strategically, by talking about cultist money. Cultist money is pretty good. It's a junking attack, right? If you think of witch, it's just like witch, except it gives a ruins instead of a curse. And there's, you know, this extra line of text where you get to play more of them. And then there's also this trash thing, but okay, the trash thing, spoiler alert, not super relevant. Most of the time. Sometimes it is. We'll get to that later too. Right, we're not thinking about that right now. We're just thinking about, okay, I'm going to play the cultist, and it's going to give out a junk, because a ruins is a junk, make no mistake about it. And then we can play another cultist if we have one. And that makes cultist money pretty good, because A, junkers are pretty good, like witch money is already pretty good. And okay, ruins aren't as bad as curses for a couple of reasons. One, they potentially can actually do something positive for you. Not worth having in your deck, but, like, you know, drawing a card is better than doing jack squat nothing, so Ruined Library is better than Confusion, which would be a curse that doesn't score a negative point. And then, of course, the curse also is, you know, negative points, so that's a thing. But the ability to chain cultists is what really makes cultist money actually be strong and as opposed to just something that's reasonably good or annoying. It's what makes it really strong. And the important point is, right, with witch money, you can't just buy silver, witch, because you end up with a ton of terminal collisions. But with cultist money, you kind of do exactly that. You go silver, cultist, and, right, if your opponent is not mirroring you, you're just going to end up with, like, 5 or 6 cultists. They're going to have all the ruins. Their deck is garbage, and your deck is, well, maybe not the epitome of the most strongest, too many superlatives in conjunction with each other, most strongest, bestest thing ever. Your deck is fine, right? You're still drawing a decent number of cards, and, well, yeah, okay, most of them have to be treasures, or they're not going to do anything because you're drawing them dead. You could buy a province off that. Your opponent's not doing much if they've got 10 ruins in their deck. So, okay, this is the baseline, and it's really strong, right? Adam would say that you should almost always just do that, and getting it fancier hurts you. I'm going to bring up the exact quote here, and that is, if you're thinking about doing anything fun in a cultist game, just don't do it, and then you win more. That is like an anti-impression of Adam, tone-wise, but it is his exact words. Like, I can't do a good Adam Horton. If you're thinking about doing anything fun in a cultist game, just don't do it, and then you win more. Whatever. Okay, anyway, the point is, he would say that. And I think, okay, that's a bit overblown, and he probably doesn't, strictly speaking, 100% of the time believe in that. And I think he probably, I would probably say that you can do other things other than just cultist money a bit more often than he would say, and there's some debate as to what counts as fun, because that's subjective. Maybe you just like drawing a lot of ruins. I don't know. There's some masochists out there, I guess. Anyway, the point is, it's really good. It's really good. That's the point. And it's really good more often than most people would like. I don't know what masochists are out there, and okay, I'm not trying to put a value judgment on that, but yeah, most people don't really like having terrible decks and just having to grovel along like this. So they don't really like this kind of gameplay. It's kind of monolithic, and in any case, even if it's not great, you know, some huge 90% of the time, it's usually at least a decent baseline, and it is the best thing, like, more often than I think almost anyone would like. So, okay. Yeah, having said all that, we should go over how you want to play it, because, well, if you're trying to win, it may not be the most enjoyable thing ever, but there's still some decisions that you need to know how to make in order to figure out what you're doing here. And this is going to help lead into a broader discussion of the card as opposed to just the stupid monolithic, I'm going to buy cultists and money and provinces strategy. But mostly you should buy cultists and money and provinces. Yeah, so you want to get silver on 3 or 4 and always get silver over nothing if this is the strategy you're playing. I'm not saying 100% of the time on cultist sports, always get silver over nothing. But at least in the early game, you're going to want to do that. And if you're just playing cultist money, you're always going to want to do that. You're going to get cultists on 5, you know, until the ruins are out, basically. And then, yeah, you know, you want to win the ruin split and win the game on the back of that, usually. So you're going to open silver, you're going to get cultist on 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or whatever, while the ruins are still there. You're just going to keep getting cultists. You're going to get extra silvers if you don't hit 5, and that's basically what you're doing. But we also want to talk about the one kind of play decision here at this early point in the game. Let's talk about a buy decision and a play decision. One, the buy decision. A lot of times, if you're playing a money deck, you should, you know, just keep buying actions that are good actions. So, like, if I have a peddler that I can afford somehow, that's better than a silver, and so I should buy it. You don't want to do that in a cultist deck, cultist money deck, because a pretty large percentage of your cards, I don't know how large, it depends on your exact deck composition, but a pretty large percentage of your cards that you're going to draw dead. Because you're playing cultist and then another cultist and then another cultist. And if I'm playing 3 cultists in a turn, then I'm drawing 6 cards out of my, you know, 6 cards and my starting hand was only 5 cards. So, like, more than half of my cards, I'm not drawing with the ability to play them, even if they're non-terminal. Certainly you don't want to get terminals because you're just going to have too much terminal collision. But even if it's a non-terminal card, okay, usually you're not going to be playing 3 cultists in a turn, so more than half of your cards, most of the time, you're not going to draw dead. But, like, even if 40% of the cards I'm drawing dead, which is playing 1 cultist every turn, that's a lot. And if I'm playing 2 cultists every turn, some turns, then it might be, you know, 25% or something. But the point being that Peddler, while usually in money decks is slightly better than a silver, the difference is not good enough to make up for the fractional chances that you draw them dead. So that's the danger, and that's what you're typically going to want to avoid. So even reasonably good non-terminals are usually things you want to avoid in a money cultist's deck. So having said that, let's talk about the play decision, which is, do I want to play the cultist that's in my hand, triggering a shuffle, or not? And the answer is, play the cultist, just trigger the shuffle, just do it, man. Okay, it's more complicated than that, but at a baseline, if you just always follow that, while you're in this early part of the game where you're giving ruins out in particular, you'll be right the vast majority of the time, right? So, yeah, you almost always play the cultist if you're giving a ruins out. Let's break down why. There's arguments for it, and there's arguments against it, right? The plus side of playing the extra cultist is you're giving the ruin out, and the other plus is you might draw more money, which might let you draw something better, right? Those are two things, and they're pretty compelling. The con, the against, the reason why you wouldn't play the cultist is the cultist that you're playing, whatever else you've played, so if you've played multiple cultists before this, potentially, whatever else is in your hand, and the thing that you're buying, all of those things are going to miss the next shuffle, right? So that would be the reason not to play the cultist. But, and that sounds like a lot, but you have to remember why that's important, right? You're slower in getting to play all of those cards out again, right? So the cultist that you're not playing, and with that in mind, the cultist that you're not playing is effectively missing the shuffle now because you didn't play it this shuffle. And now is usually more important than later. So if it's just the cultist that's in your hand, like, what are you thinking about, man? Just play it, right? But if it's like a few cultists and, you know, let's say it's going to be three cultists and there's no way that you're going to buy anything better because you have enough money in hand to play the cultist already, then you can think about not playing the cultist. But the problem is the ruins that you're giving out is not going to be in your opponent's shuffle. It's going to wait till the next shuffle. So it's still kind of marginal. And importantly, if you've got three cultists in play, probably the shuffle you're triggering is going to be quite a short shuffle. So you're not delaying all of these plays that much. So this would be the only time to even think about it in this phase of the game where you're still giving ruins out is, right, if you don't have any more like cultists to draw, and if you're not going to buy anything better, and if you're making a lot of good things miss the shuffle, then maybe there's a really small chance that it's better to not trigger the shuffle. But if you're given a ruins out, you usually just trigger it. Okay, but then later on, right, the ruins are going to be gone. There's not going to be any left. And then, at that point, you really have to think about it more. It's how much is missing the shuffle, right? How many of these cultists, how much of my good money? And is it really going to lead to me buying something better or not? And significantly better or not, right? So, right, if it's a difference between gold and province, but I might actually prefer gold to province anyway, then maybe having the gold not miss the shuffle and these three cultists not miss the shuffle or however much it is going to be worth it. But even here sometimes, if it's just one cultist, you usually have it miss the shuffle anyway. It's fine, right? It's fine. But okay, there's more to the game, even in this cultist money thing. There is more to the game than just buying money and buying cultists and, you know, oh, the cultists, the ruins are gone, and that's the end of the game. That's not the end of the game. You need to think about what you want to do after the ruins are gone. And, yeah, so technically, there's a little bit of revision here. So I was talking earlier, like, you just keep getting cultists until the ruins are actually factually gone. But remember that time in Dominion is generally measured by shuffles, so a slightly more accurate way to say it would be that the transition between I'm just going to keep getting cultists and I'm going to think about getting other things actually happens at a point where you're very confident that you're not going to see the card that you're buying before the ruins are gone, right? So if I'm at the top of a shuffle and there's one ruins left, and I have a cultist or more cultists in my shuffle, then, yeah, for sure I'm not going to see this card before the cultists are gone, because I'm going to play that cultist and give out the last ruins. So, okay, there's one ruins left, or there's fewer ruins left than I have cultists left in the current shuffle, then you can start thinking about getting other stuff. Sometimes you're very confident your opponent is going to play a cultist and give you some ruins, so that also affects it a little bit. If you're not sure whether you're going to see the card or not again, then err on the side of getting a cultist, because cultist is usually not that much worse than the alternative card anyway that you're getting for this deck. So err on the side of getting a cultist, but do realize that, okay, it's not strictly speaking that the ruins have to be gone. You want to be thinking about, are the ruins going to be gone before I see this card again? And it's possible that you might want to get another card, even if the ruins aren't going to be gone before you see it again, or even if there's might not. But that's going to be pretty rare, and you want to be exceptionally confident that what you're doing is the right play before you're going for that kind of a move if you're playing this deck. And I'm not going to get too much into why you might be exceptionally confident, because usually it's quite complex and tricky, and like, I don't want this podcast to last 5 hours as I'm explaining every tiny little minutia case that might come up. But okay, let's say we've determined that it is the point where I don't need to just keep getting cultist after cultist after cultist to continue the junking, because the junk is either out or about to be out within the next, you know, turn or something. So yeah, what now? What do I get now? And basically the answer there is you want to get the best treasure possible. And the caveat, well, you want to get province if you can buy province, just like in a money deck, because it is a money deck. And if you can't get a province, get the best treasure possible, with the caveat that in some cases cultist is better than the best treasure possible. So you're going to take gold, you're going to take counterfeit, you're going to take treasure trove, you're going to take a big masterpiece. Sometimes you're going to take something as garbagey as Stash. Apologies to Stash, except not really apologies to Stash. Stash is not a good card. And here you're not taking particularly great advantage of it being able to stack your deck. So, like, yeah, sometimes you get a Stash, but that's quite marginal. So sometimes people are really into just, like, getting more cultists on 6, on 7, on whatever, over a big masterpiece, over a gold, over spices. Okay, probably not over spices, but maybe over spices, right? Like, whatever treasure you might want to get. Yeah, sometimes people are into just, they just keep getting cultists because it draws cards. And yeah, there's a couple reasons for this. I haven't actually asked them, but I assume there's a couple reasons for this. And one is, like, they want to be able to chain their cultists. That's the advantage of cultists, right? Is that you got to keep chaining them. It's like it's not terminal. But, right, you don't want to lose out on the benefit, but, like, that line of thinking is a little bit fallacious, right? It is a point, I mean, it's not wrong. The benefit is that it acts like it's not terminal. But the whole point of something not being terminal is that you can't draw it dead, right? That's the whole benefit. The benefit is that you can't draw a cultist dead off another cultist. But the treasures are also not able to be drawn dead off cultist, because you can't draw treasures dead. Edge case me with, you know, some capitalism thing you're playing, or Scepter you're playing in action that draws cards in your buy phase, but it's after you've bought something and therefore you can't play what, I don't know. Like, yes, there's some edge cases, but in terms of cultist, right, you can't draw a treasure dead off of a cultist. That's true, at least. So it's not really a benefit the cultist has over the other cards, the treasures that you might be buying. So that's one thing. Don't fall into that trap. The other reason that people, I think, want to get more cultists is that it draws cards, and drawing cards is good, they've heard. And yeah, sure, drawing cards is good, but in this kind of deck, in the scenarios that we're talking about here, all that you're drawing, the only benefits of drawing cards, is that you're drawing more money, or drawing more cultists, which let you draw more money. So it's really just about upping the money you have at the end of the day, or in this case, not the day, but at the turn. And yes, Cultist is going to do that, but the other treasures, depending on how good they are, might do it more. Now let's look at a concrete example of the trade-off here. Let's do some hard math. So let's talk about a reasonably typical deck that you might have here. Okay, it's not exactly probably ever going to come up. Maybe I shouldn't say ever, but it's going to rarely come up exactly this way. But let's say you have, you're starting 10 cards that are normal coppers and estates. You have 3 silvers, you have 3 cultists, and you have 5 ruins, right? The ruins have just run out. The ruins got split 5-5 each. You've gotten 3 cultists, and you've gotten 3 silvers over the course of this point. Usually you probably have another silver or something around this point in time, but this is not that far off from what you'd get. So it's a little bit complicated. We'd like to fall back on when we've talked about money density and that paradigm, and that totally applies here. All of those things that we talked about before when we were talking about money density, it absolutely applies. This is the exact paradigm we're in, except it's a little bit trickier here because you've got cultists that let you play more cultists, and the amount of chaining that you can do means that you're not always dealing with 5 cards. Sometimes you're dealing with 6 cards or 7 cards or whatever. After you've gotten all the cultists through play, and how all of that works is not... Yeah, anyway. The point is, if I'm starting from a... I have this 21-card deck, the starting cards, silvers, ruins, 3 silvers, 5 ruins, 3 cultists. If I have that deck, my expectation from a random starting... I've just started a shuffle, a clean shuffle up from this deck. My expectation is that a random hand on average, and again, average is not everything, but it's a reasonably good approximation here. On average, this deck is going to produce 4.33 coins per turn, 4.33 coins of money in a turn. If we add a cultist, then instead of doing 4.33 from a random draw, it's going to go up to 4.69, right? So that's an improvement. Yeah, adding the cultist definitely helps, which shouldn't surprise anybody. If we had a gold, though, instead of going from 4.33 to 4.69, we go from 4.33 to 5.00, right? And that's not exactly 5, it's rounding to 5, but it's rounding so close that to that many sig figs, it's 5.00. So adding the gold is like pretty demonstrably better than adding the cultist. Now, if we'd add a silver, then instead of going from 4.33 to 4.69 from cultist, or 5.00 from gold, it goes to 4.69 for silver. Now, you might notice that that's the same as adding a cultist, and actually the silver is higher by 0.001. Again, this is a rounding thing. So adding the silver produces a little tiny, teeny, eensy bit more money. And actually, we remember that the cultists make themselves, which are the best cards in your deck, or close to the best cards in your deck, miss the shuffle more often. Then that shows that silver is better. And if we remember that ruins aren't actual blank cards, and adding a cultist makes you more likely to draw them dead instead of being able to get some use out of them, then silver is actually looking kind of clearly better than a cultist for this deck at exactly this point in time. But having said that, as the game goes on longer, you're probably going to be adding more good cards than bad cards, and at that point, your cultists are probably going to be better later than right now, and the right now difference is so small that I would probably still get a cultist over a silver in this exact deck. But the point is, it's actually quite close. It's quite close. So cultists really aren't anything special at this point once the ruins are gone. They're good cards, but they're only about as good as silvers. They're probably a little bit better than silvers over the course of a long game, but they're not tons better by any means. They're in that same range of thing of where you want to be. But that's not the only consideration to go on, even if we're trying to make the decision between cultist and silver. And certainly, almost any of the other treasures that you'd be thinking about, let's give an exception of Talisman or Cori, but most of the treasures that you're thinking about are going to be better than silver. So, like, Venture is going to make more than one money, although it also has this triggering shuffles problem a little bit. It's going to be better than a cultist if all you're concerned about is your own game plan, right? Venture is going to be better. Certainly, you'd expect Counterfeit to be better. You'd expect a lot of these cards to be better, and just don't be getting cultists in these situations. It doesn't really need to be much better than silver to be enough better than silver to really be better than a cultist. But there's other considerations other than just what you're doing going on, and so let's think about that. Also, that kind of math changes a little bit depending on whether you, I should note, whether you won the Ruin Spiller or lost it, right? If you have six or more ruins in your deck, then the cultists get incrementally worse. Extra cultists do. If you have fewer ruins in your deck, the cultists get incrementally better. So, again, these are all very minor differences, but cultist, the grand scheme of things, the point is that cultist is about as good as silver in these, as good as a silver in these decks once the ruins are gone. Probably slightly better on average, but pretty close. So just don't be afraid to get treasures. That's the real point. But the externalities of what I'm talking about with it's not only your deck that you want to be thinking about is that in cultist games, both players go for cultists. The ruins are going to run out. And then the cultists themselves are often reasonably low. There might be 5 to 7 cultists gone on average, so you'd get 3 to 5 left. So piles running out is something you actually have to think about despite it being a money game. And that's going to be particularly important in these games if there's some other pile that's naturally in danger of lowering or running out. Now, it's not often going to be that there are other piles that are going to run out. I'm struggling to come up with an example of another pile that would be running out in a cultist money game like that, but somehow let's say it's possible and it's happening. You really want to think about it. But the most common third pile in this kind of situation is going to be the duchy pile. So if the cultists run out and the duchies run out, that can be a three pile ending for you, and you have to think about whether trying to angle for that three-pile ending is going to be beneficial to you or more beneficial to your opponent. I mean, it's going to be beneficial to someone unless it's like exactly doesn't matter at all, but that's going to be extremely rare. It's usually going to be more beneficial to either you or your opponent. So it's something to think about. And in these mirrors, it's even still something to think about depending on how many cultists are left, how often you hit exactly five, how much work it is to try to angle for this kind of an ending versus, taking an alternative. If you particularly don't want piles to run because it's negative for you, then that might be an additional reason why going for silver over cultist might actually be the right play, even though cultist is typically a little bit better in the long run. If you particularly do want the piles to try to run and you want to angle for this kind of ending, then that might be a reason why you go for the cultist over the silver or a venture or something that's only marginally better than cultist, even if the silver might be better in the long run. So this is just something to be thinking about, right? The weakness, if there is one, of just the cultist money deck is that it usually has a little bit of a hard time closing the game out by like just getting 8 provinces. And that's particularly true if your opponent is at least somewhat mirrored you and you have a reasonably large number of ruins in your deck. If you've got, 3, 4, 5 ruins in your deck, then it's going to be a little bit hard to just empty all of the provinces out. And so you want to think about maybe your opponent isn't entirely mirroring you and they're trying to do something fancier or more fun, then you might want to use this as an escape hatch because emptying 8 duchies, the rest of the cultists and 8 duchies, is a lot easier than emptying 8 provinces in a lot of cases. But the thing that you have to think about, and I'm not going to tell you exactly when to do what, because it's just a complex decision, and you really have to see how the game's going and what your opponent is doing. Yeah, if there's a lot of other points available to your opponent to where they can just they can ignore going for provinces, this is going to be something to think about. But if there's even if there's only just provinces and duchies, you're gonna you want to consider just going for the duchies, but it's more of a desperation play than like a particularly strong going to win play. Sometimes you need to go for a desperation play because you're behind and like you need to make the game shorter and just mix it up and hope that the draws work out for you, which is your deck is worse, but it's more likely that with a small number of turns the, your draws will be better than theirs than over a large number of turns where the law of large numbers is going to say that things are going to work out to their average more likely. Because the thing about this is you probably can't just say, I'm going to just buy three more cultists to empty that pile and then buy all the duchies turn after turn, because your deck isn't really good enough to do that in these cases. So typically you're not going to be able to do that, which kind of means like maybe you should build a little bit more so that your duds happen. If you're going to dud anyway, you know it's better to build and then green as opposed to then green and then build. And that's an oversimplification. Sometimes you should just take duchy when you can get it and then take silver and then take duchy again as opposed to trying to get gold now and anticipating, because you still might miss five later even if you do get the gold, blah, 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 blah. But the point is, right, it's not that crazy to think, well, I should build more first. But at the point you're building a little bit more first by getting a gold or something, then maybe you're going to be hitting eight anyway, and then is duchy really better than province? Sometimes it is, but like this is why the default is usually like build up your money some more and then go for provinces, particularly in mirrors, and then go for provinces, and then maybe you transition into duchies because getting eight provinces or maybe even five provinces or maybe even four provinces is too hard. You transition into getting duchies and eventually pile on duchies, but only after you've built a little bit more, gotten a few golds, and gotten a couple provinces first, and then your deck is deteriorating, and then you finish out on duchies, and your opponent who built forever isn't going to be able to get the six provinces in time that they need, or the five provinces in time that they need, or whatever it is, and you have enough duchies to overcome the one or two province deficit that you have, something like that, right? So the whole point is be cognizant of duchies, but you really need to read how the game is going, how your draws are going, how your opponent's draws are going, what decks each of you are going for, whether somebody's trying to get fancy or not, how likely it is that piles are actually going to be able to run, if they do help you, if they don't help you, if they do help you, can they score enough points otherwise? If they don't help you, can they score enough points otherwise, etc., etc. When trying to figure out whether you're trying to go just for the duchy thing or whether you're trying to build more and get provinces and whatever. Now, this has all been talking more or less just about going for cultist money, but there is a lot more to the card than just cultist money, and despite what Adam says, I think there are situations where you want to do other things. So, first of all, there's very, very few things that are going to say don't go for cultist at all. I want to stress that. Usually it's going to be, you're going to go for cultist, and you can also do something fancier with the cultists than just playing, I'm going to buy cultists and treasures and green cards. It's, I think there's pretty often, like, I'm going to buy cultists and maybe some treasures, and then I'm going to buy a bunch more action cards or something else that's fancier, and then eventually I'm going to score. I think that comes up semi-frequently, but it's going to be very rare that it's going to be that I'm going to just go for this fancy other thing that totally ignores cultists whatsoever, right? That comes up sometimes, but it's really rare, and usually you're getting into things that are on, like, combo tier, where it's like, well, I ignored cultists, and sure, I was able to finish the game out. Like, the reason I ignored cultists is because by the time they gave me, like, the second ruin, I had seven provinces, because I was just able to do something completely broken, right? Turn 10 or 11, I'm ending the game by scoring a bunch of points, and the cultists just didn't have enough time to hurt me, right? Those boards come up sometimes and do that if something that powerful is around. But in general, there's very few... it's not going to come up that much, right? And yeah, I guess that's what I'm saying. So usually the cultist is going to be a factor in your game plan, and it's just a question of, am I doing fancier things along with my cultist, or am I just going for cultist and money, right? So there are a few things that just by themselves are, okay, this is a slight overstatement, but just by themselves kind of enable you to not just go for cultist and money, and those are like the strongest trashers there are: donate, chapel, cathedral. Those are still really good, and yeah, you probably don't just want to go cultist money with them. You still probably want to go cultist, and if the rest of the board is just like completely weak, there's nothing going on, you probably still get these trashers and then mostly go with cultist money along with the trashers, but like trashing down your starting cards with a chapel first and then being able to get rid of ruins later is probably better than just going for cultist money ignoring the chapel. And that's almost certainly the case with donate and cathedral, because they just don't ask that much of you. Donate, when you time the donate, is not at all trivial, but you're definitely going to get the donate to clean you up at some point and blah, 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 blah. Of course, like, figure out what's going on those boards. There's probably also going to be something stronger to do than just cultist money afterwards, right? Because you can clean yourself up and then build a real deck that draws cards and does stuff if the trashing is that good. But it really needs to be close to that good or have some more help, right? Now, sacrifice, I want to mention, is often cited as a counter to cultist, and I think that it's generally pretty good in these kinds of games, but it's not just like, oh, I'm going to skip cultist because sacrifice is around. Like, you have to realize that even if you're sacrificing the ruins to get +2 cards, +2 actions, you had to draw the ruins possibly more than once before you get to that point. And the end result isn't Lost City. It's like a village that trashed the ruins for you. And trashing the ruins is good. So, like, sacrifice is generally pretty good. But, right, you still needed to do that. So, like, the cultist still slows you down. On a board with sacrifice, you usually want to play with both cultist and sacrifice. And let's not forget, you're drawing a lot of cards with your cultists. You're going to be drawing that sacrifice dead not a trivial amount of the time. So, yes, you usually go for a couple of sacrifices along with your cultist plan, but usually, again, I don't want to say always here, but usually the cultist is still going to be something that you need to reckon with, and it's not just like, well, sacrifices around, cultist is a piece of garbage. Like, the other thing to note here is that here's one of the places that the on-trash effect of cultist can be relevant, is that, you know, you go for cultist with sacrifice in your deck and you do both of them, you're going to get to a point where you can sacrifice the cultist and draw a lot of cards. And that's really good. So, yeah, sacrifice is definitely going to be a lot stronger on a cultist board than normal. I don't want to say definitely. Usually. But it's not like you're just going to be like, hard counter, don't give me those. Like, no, you still want to go for this stuff usually, right? But let's talk about other ways, other things that are available that might help you do some fancier stuff besides just the uber strong trashers and sacrifice. And we're going to start with other trashers, right? Other trashers can help you deal with the ruins, but you're going to draw them dead a lot, and the ruins tend to come in pretty fast. So you don't want to just ignore the cultist. Usually going to need more help than just, I have a trasher that to prevent me from just going for cultist money, right? You usually want to have, it just takes too long to dig yourself out, given that you're not drawing the trasher that much, or if you go for the Trasher first, then that often is going to slow you down into getting Cultists, so you're going to have extra ruins, right? If it's just a Trasher and it's not super, super strong, then, like, if you have to get the Trasher first, you're behind on Cultists, so you're behind on ruins, so you're more buried, so did the Trasher really help enough? I don't know. Like, something like Forager isn't going to cut it, right? Something like Steward, it's questionable. It's questionable, right? Even something like Ambassador, because of the nature of ruins, it's only so-so. Sometimes there's enough support there for Ambassador to be able to bury your opponent more than it buries you in time. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes you get snowballed under by the Cultists faster than you can snowball them under by the Ambassadors. And while, yeah, hypothetically, if the game lasted 100 turns, right, your Ambassadors would eventually leave them with all their junk in the end. But it takes a long time for that to happen, and that Cultist money deck, if it's not getting Cultist itself because you went for Ambassador rather than the money to be able to get Cultists and play them, the Cultist money deck that isn't getting junked at all, or isn't getting junked almost at all, is actually not that bad at being able to deliver, well, you know, enough points to effectively close out the game, even if it isn't scoring all the eight provinces. So keep that in mind, right? Even something like Ambassador, and now Ambassador is a little bit particular, but it isn't just enough by itself. Something that really helps trashing or thinning to be able to be good enough is a way to have extra actions at the start of a turn, which mitigates the propensity for you to draw that Trasher dead, which is a big problem in these, you know, Cultist games. So if there's a way to have extra actions at the start of a turn, then that is really, really helpful with getting the trashing up and going, which then gets your lets your deck get under control, which then lets you build to something fancier if there's the payload or the other things there, you know, the payload, the draw, that kind of thing, to help you get. And there is draw available because Cultists is draw. If you have extra actions at the start of your turn, you have actions, you have draw. That's draw. There you go, right? The Cultists actually are kind of like, right, Cultist beyond the first Cultist is kind of like a lab that also maybe gives a junk. I probably should have said this at the beginning of the episode, but oops, I didn't. Anyway, so ways to have actions at the start of the turn. Let's talk about what those might be. Villagers. Villagers is a way that helps a lot in order for that to be able to happen, right? If you have a villager at the start of your turn, then you can play all your Cultists and still be able to have an action because you have villagers. Now, you need to be able to get enough villagers to do this, so, you know, you need some source of that. And you can look up the sources of villagers as well as I can, but if it's just one villager one time, Silk Merchant's not going to cut it. you know, now, in a lot of cases, maybe you still want to play with Silk Merchant, and maybe you want to get a few of them, and then you don't need to trash that many times, potentially, hypothetically, depending on what your trasher is. So you may not need to use the villagers that often, and you're not always going to draw your trasher dead, right? Sometimes you're going to draw it naturally, and it's not going to be dead. So maybe Silk Merchant is probably still more likely to get me to play something fancier than not, but, you know, it doesn't get there by itself either. Anyway, I've gone on a bit of a tangent here, right? So villagers are one way to have extra actions at the start of the turn. You just need to be able to plan a way to get them, and of course you're still going to want to be junking and you're going to want to have the thinning. So you need to have a game plan for how you're going to get all of those things, and you want to get them in the right order so that you're not getting losing the junk split too hard and all of those things. But yeah, villagers is one way. Ghost Town is another way because you don't draw it dead, so it's going to be a village for you the next turn. Boom, that's nice. Coin of the Realm, yeah, again, you don't draw it dead, and you can call it exactly when you need it, so that helps a lot. Fishing Village is like a real maybe, but it's just a question of sequencing it in at the right times because it's worse than silver for hitting five earlier, and you don't want to miss out on your getting to the Cultists enough. So maybe you can take that risk and get the extra fishing villages early. Kind of depends a little bit how good the payoffs for doing all of this fancy stuff is. Because you still need to draw a fishing village not dead for it to give you the actions this turn or the next turn. Because it's a duration and it does this turn or the next turn, makes your chances better, but it's not just trivial that fishing village is enough, right? Something like Star Chart can maybe kind of help, because when you trigger the shuffle, you got to stick a village on the top, but like that's pretty sketchy, and you're going to want good other support then to help, like, you know, mash the villages and the draw and the trashing together in the right order. Star Chart is only so-so. And something like City Gate, again, similar to Star Chart, it's going to do it every turn for you, so you have six cards to see your thing instead of five, so you're slightly less likely to draw the thing dead. But again, it's pretty so-so. It's pretty so-so. Let's talk about things other than trashing and villages, and let's go to knights next. Knights are something we've kind of already talked about, in that we talked about Ghost Town, but it's not the only knight that helps you out here, right? But like treasures, the important thing on all the knights is that you can't draw them dead, because your knight phase is after your action phase. You're never drawing the knights dead. So first of all, any cultist money deck, you can just incorporate any knight card into, and I don't mean knights, K-N-I-G-H-T-S. Like, I'm not talking Sir Martin or Dame Anna here. I'm talking about knights, N-I-G-H-T-S, the card type from Nocturne. You're not going to draw them dead, so if they're helping you out, then they're helping you out, and you can incorporate them into your deck like treasures, but they also potentially help you to do fancier things, because typically don't give you treasure-like effects, and so some of them trash for you, some of them gain you cards, some of them do the other things that you might need to be, some of them give you extra actions the next turn, Ghost Town. They do things that are going to help you maybe potentially do the fancier, funner thing. So keep those in mind. Let's talk about some other notes, some other cards. Herald is a card that you might think, if I've got all these ruins, then my heralds are more likely to hit. And that's true, but it's a little bit of false logic you might see here. So herald makes your heralds, the ruins make your heralds more likely to hit, this is what I'm trying to say, but they're less likely to hit the good cards in your deck, right? Yeah, they're going to hit a ruin, but who cares if I hit a ruin, right? I'm still less likely to hit a cultist or a goons or whatever fancy card it is that I want to be hitting. You know, I'm not going to hit my bridge more often because I have the ruins in my deck. It still hurts, right? So the thing is, ruins aren't good for Herald. They hurt Herald. It doesn't hurt them as badly as it hurts maybe some other things. So Herald is like, the ruins effect is mitigated a little bit. It's still bad, but it's mitigated a little bit. You may often want to play with Heralds in your deck if you're trying to do something fancier, and there are some of the other components there, but like Herald doesn't counter the ruins. It doesn't counter Cultist, so don't get that impression. Scrying Pool, similar thing. Scrying Pool, ruins make your Scrying Pool draw more cards, but it makes them draw fewer of your non-ruin cards. Okay, there's some edge case here because Ruined Library is a ruin and it might draw an extra card for you. So if you have plenty of village support, then like you got to draw extra Ruined Library and then you're drawing another extra non-ruin card. But for all practical effects, this is never going to end up working out good for you. And in particular, the ruins make you less likely to draw a Scrying Pool at all, which is the hugest thing. So yeah, definitely the ruins aren't helping your Scrying Pool deck. But again, the Scrying Pool drawing all of them for free, if you get to it, does mitigate the effect of these ruins somewhat, just not by a lot. And I want to make a special note here about the Scrying Pool. If you're playing in one of these kinds of decks, and you're both playing with scrying pools and you're both playing with ruins, leave the ruins on top, right? It's an action card that doesn't draw them extra cards. Leave it on top. Like, leave that ruined village on top. Leave that ruined market on top. Just leave it on top. Yes, it's an action, and they can draw into it with their scrying pool, but it's actually not a worse thing to be on top than, like, a copper. So, yeah, leave that ruined mine there. City Quarter. Similar to the scrying pool picture, if you have three cards in your hand with City Quarter, you draw three cards. So it looks like those ruins drew you extra cards. But the thing is, if those three ruins weren't in your deck, you would have just drawn those three cards that you drew off the City Quarter. So you haven't actually drawn more cards than if the ruins weren't in your deck until you play the second City Quarter. So if you're playing multiple City Quarters and that's good enough otherwise and all of this stuff, then maybe the ruins help you. But the thing, just like the scrying pool, is like, in practice, it's not going to, because you're going to be less likely to draw the City Quarter, and just like drawing two of them early enough and often enough, it's just not going to happen, right? It's not going to be. Again, it's a mitigating thing than a, oh, the ruins are good for me. Yes, you can devise scenarios where they would be good for you, but in general, they won't be. Vineyards. You have the picture by now, right? Yes, the ruins will make your vineyard score more points, and in some situations, that can be a good thing. But it's still not like, overall, I'm still happy you gave me these ruins. Now my vineyards are worth more, unless somehow you can, like, get four ruins before they really junk you very much, and then you're laughing all the way home to the bank. But, like, vineyard costs a potion, so... did I say get four ruins before they junk you much? I meant get four vineyards. That's just not going to happen, right? So, realistically, yes, the vineyards might be relevant because, like, you have five extra action cards, but in general, it's like, okay, so I have five extra action cards. I have 10 actions in total. Am I, like, I don't know, maybe my vineyards are worth 4 points? Am I going to add a potion to my deck to let me buy a card that is slightly better than Duchy? I don't know. Like, again, if somehow you can deal with the ruins in a way that it's not hurting your deck too much, and they're somehow still also in your deck, then sure, you're laughing all the way to the bank. It's just like, in practice, that basically never happens. If you have, like, three of these things together, like, there's scrying pools, and there's heralds, and there's vineyards, then, like, maybe you can cobble something together. But even then, like, taking 10 ruins is just so hard that you probably at least want to do some amount of ruin giving. Yeah. And then the last one I want to talk about in this counter segment is advance. Now, you've gotten the picture now, right? No, in this case, advance is real, right? They're giving you an action which you can then advance into, typically, not always, but typically into a very good card. So it really is a counter. Even here, though, still, like, okay, you had to draw the thing, and you're buying the advance instead of whatever else you were buying this turn. It's not like I'm just laughing all the way to the... Oh, I'm really overusing the laughing all the way to the bank idiom, aren't I? Anyway, it's not like it's just pure upside for you. It's, okay, I need to think about this. And if buys are plentiful enough that I can have extra ones, like fair is on the board or something, then, yeah, being able to advance all the ruins you give me into better cards may make it such that Cultist is not worth getting, but it also might not. You need to be able to build a deck that takes advantage of that. And those decks, you know, sometimes can take advantage of Cultist also. I mean, the On Trash is not really going to come up here from advancing your Cultist because the extra cards you're drawing are probably not very useful, given that you've already bought a card, so you can't play any more treasures. You're not in the action phase, so you can't play any more actions. But, like, I don't know, if there's, like, also Villa or something. Come up with some situation to where you could do that, but... For the most part, yes, advance really might be a real counter to the Cultist thing. and it is the closest to like a real counter that there is, to where it's like you don't want to go for cultist. But even in this case, it's not just a foregone conclusion that I don't want to touch the cultist pile. Okay, more specific cards to talk about. We already talked about Ghost Town with Knights. Monastery is one that can really help clean you up, so it can often be good in this kind of trashing and, okay, it's not technically extra actions, but it can effectively work non-terminally for you, even Can't Be Drawn Dead. So watch out for Monastery in these kinds of games. Vampire is a good card, but you don't want to go too heavy on the vampires before you go into the cultists. You're still going to get snowballed under by ruins. So my rule of thumb is you get one vampire and then switch to use it to gain a cultist, and then you switch to buying cultists, and then you keep getting the cultists until the ruins are gone, and then maybe you switch to more vampires, or maybe you do other stuff. The bat does not trash you fast enough to skip the cultists. So it's a both thing. It's not an either-or thing, right? Den of Sin is good for these decks, this old Microsoft operating system. But usually it's going to be something that you don't want to get over the cultist itself, because it draws you two cards, and the cultist draws you two cards, and they're more or less both non-terminal. The Den of Sin is going to miss the shuffle because it's a duration. The cultist is going to miss the shuffle because it chains into more cultists, but the cultist trains into more cultists. The cultist giving a ruins is such a bigger deal than that, that typically you don't want to get dens before, again, you're facing the situation where the ruins would be gone. The only advantage that den has is that you get it right away, whereas cultist you might not, which is usually enough once the giving the ruins factor is not in play to make the den better than the cultist. Although, again, pile outs are something to think about here. Maybe you even still get the cultist, although probably not. Den is usually better in this case because now, again, is usually better than later. But there's also some... there's also the drawing cards at the start of your turn is better than drawing them later, so that's another small plus for Den. That's particularly true if you're trying to do something fancy, although that benefit is pretty small. It helps you have a village a little bit, but not by a ton. And you need to think about in all of these situations, like, how many cultists do you have? When you're thinking about trying to do something fancy, how many cultists do you have in terms of that affects the percentage of the time where you're drawing the fancier cards dead versus not dead? Anyway, yeah, den is usually good, but again, usually only if the ruins are out. Or the other case for den is if you know that it's going to enable you to get a cultist on your next turn that you otherwise wouldn't get. And that's almost always just like exactly turn three. If you've opened silver and you have five, then if you get a den, then you're for sure going to get cultist the next turn. Even there, I'm not sure that den is better than cultist, because like if you have six, maybe it's even more the case. There is some chance of you hitting five, right? Crop rotation also, I want to mention in a similar vein, if you hit exactly six on turn three, then you probably want to, after opening silver, you probably want to open crop rotation. You probably want to get crop rotation on turn three there, because it's going to guarantee you hit five the next turn and can buy cultist, which you were very unlikely to do without the crop rotation. And crop rotation is probably better than silver for what you're trying to do. So, yeah, similar thing there. But Den of Sin, yeah. Changeling helps in being a third pile for a pile out sometimes, but in just cultist money, it's not that useful. If there is somehow, again, another card, then somehow Changeling might be useful, but like, how are you gaining the Changeling? If there's a way to gain it easily, like, I don't know, maybe it can be helpful, but Changeling is one of the least impactful knight cards. There's just some other cards to talk about. Trade is actually not a card. It's an event, but okay, sue me. Don't actually sue me, please. That's not a solicitation for a lawsuit. But trade is really good for the money plan. It really helps the money plan. Actually, all the other treasures help that are nice and useful, like venture, spices, tend to help the money plan also. So let's mention that. But trade also really helps the money plan because you got to get rid of these garbagey ruins and get a couple silvers at the same time. It's like a win-win. Trade is really good for the cultist money plan. Cemetery is a really good, actually effective trasher because, again, it's not something that you draw dead because you don't need to draw it. And then you have the money and you can draw junk, trash four junk cards at a time. So cemetery is very effective and it is something to really also look out for. But it's limited, right? You have to buy it and it is itself a junk card. So it's effectively only thinning three junk out of your deck and you need to have four money along with four junks in your hand, which means you had to have played multiple cultists beforehand, but it's definitely something to think about for sure. Transmogrify. Now, Transmogrify is a bit of an interesting one because it can be very, very good, and I've won games off the back of Transmogrify in Cultist Money Mirrors. Cultist Money Mirrors, even. Sometimes even not win money, but the point here is it's non-terminal. You can still draw it dead, so that's something to be concerned about. But in my experience, I'm not sure whether you want to open with Transmogrify in these kinds of decks, whether you want to get it only after the ruins are gone, whether you want to get it then at all. Maybe it depends on how many cultists you have and how many ruins you have and etc. The likelihood of drawing it dead. But it certainly can be very, very good. Right? You can turn all of the normal Transmogrify stuff, turn a state into silver, turn a ruin into a copper. Okay, that's not very usual or useful probably. It can help you with certain pile-out plans, you know, turn cultist into duchy, turn cultist back into cultist, turn province into province, turn cultist into gold, and all of the turn cultists into draw you three extra cards because of that on-trash ability. And that is super powerful in my experience. So Transmogrify is something that you should look out for, but it's not at all clear how best to use it. It's going to depend on a lot of other things, but be aware of it. A big thing here is also Lurker. Lurker is a card that can trash the cultist from the supply and draw you three cards, which is really, really good. It's like two labs, but from one play, and it only costs two. Having said all of this, that can then maybe gain you cultists later. Having said all of this, you don't just want to be mindless, and you don't want to not play cultists. It opens up the possibilities for what you can do, and you can do a lot of other things. And I've seen it ranked as one of the strongest few two-card combos, but it's not just a two-card combo because you still need to be doing a bunch of other things. You still need to be giving them junk from cultists, probably, and or have a very strong plan on how to keep your deck under control with some pretty good trashers or something and being able to build to do other stuff. So don't just mindlessly say, I'm just going to keep drawing cards every time with my lurkers, because then the cultists run out, and then what do? Like, you then scurry to draw, to gain the cultists, and I don't know, where are you? You still want to be gaining cultists, you still want to be junking your opponent, and or having a good game plan, probably and, but having a good game plan to be doing things with these extra cards you're drawing. So like, yeah, drawing three more cards is great, and then I draw another lurker, which lets me draw three more cards, which is great, but like, at the end of the day, I need to be doing something active, and usually there will be something active to do that's nice and useful for you, but like, have a plan for what that is. Please have a plan for what that is. Quest is something you don't want to sleep on. One, you can discard a cultist. Like, you get to the end of your shuffle, and you don't want to, maybe playing the extra cultist is marginal, like the ruins are gone or something. You can quest the cultist. More importantly than that, you know, you play one cultist, you have six cards in your hand. You can quest away six cards, gain a gold. Maybe you didn't have enough money because, you know, your deck has a lot of ruins in it to buy a gold, but you can quest for a gold. So that's like a nice little thing in your to keep in your back pocket for these cultist money games. Quest, it's a thing. Courtier, Cultist has three types. Ruins have two types. So it looks like Courtier is good. Courtier's still usually not that good because you draw it dead so often. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. And if you draw with a cultist, you usually want to play the cultist after. So, like, you could take action, money, gold. So it's not bad, and it's something to keep in mind. But particularly, it's going to be something that you're going to want to do more often if you have ways to get villages at the... Or not villages. Ways to get extra actions at the start of your turn. You know, your ghost towns, your coins of the realm, villagers, you know, a few villagers is going to go a long way. Maybe you opened patron silver instead of silver silver, and you can build up two or three villagers over the course of the game. That's probably enough to get a courtier to be worth it. But in general, it's something to think about maybe, but it's a little bit sketchy. And the last kind of cards I want to talk about before the end of this episode are defenses. So defenses may well be worth going for, and there's a lot of them that you might want to think about, but you don't want to just necessarily go straight for the defenses too heavily, because how likely is it really that you're going to line up your defense with the junk coming in? And okay, if it can be another thing that supports this early trashing plan, it's like, I'm going to trash early, and then I'm going to have defenses, and I'm going to be able to make sure that I always have my defenses up. And for some defenses, that's going to work. For some, it won't. So, okay, like, if there's a lighthouse or a guardian thing going on, maybe you can thin down enough fast enough and then always be covered by your lighthouse and guardian and doing your other drawing things and be fine. So there's that. Moat is like, yeah, I don't know. It's probably better than nothing on 2. I don't know if it's better than silver on 3. Lighthouse is probably better than silver in a cultist game usually, because yes, you can draw it dead, but how often are you going to draw it dead? And like, it's not that much worse than silver if you don't draw it dead, and defending you is really good. But like, guardian? On a 3-4, I'm opening guardian, but that's mostly to hit cultist on turn 2, and then it's like not that bad. And again, I can't draw it dead. I guess this is the last knight that's worth mentioning. So like, guardian is kind of nice there, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Just use your common sense. Traitor is, again, something you might want to do, and it might be fine at some point. And if you draw it in a way that it collides with the cultist late in the game, you can trash the cultist to get 5 silvers and draw a few cards, which is really good for your money deck. And yeah, as your opponent plays cultists on you, if you have it in your hand, you can get a few extra silvers instead of ruins, which can be instrumental in winning the split, and the extra silvers aren't bad for you because you're playing cultist money anyway. So like, traitor's worth getting, but you don't want to rely on it too much, and you don't want to be too concerned with it because you also don't want to slow yourself down and getting to 5 too much. So like, again, traitor is something to think about, but it's not going to defend you reliably, right? Unless they're saved. So, and a lot of this stuff, save is another edge case, so thanks for that. Watchtower, again, like, it's a reasonable card to add. It's not really worse than silver on turn 1. Later on, it does some stuff for you because you can use it to top deck. And if the ruins come in, you can trash them. And maybe if there's a way to gain cultists, you can use the Watchtower to trash them immediately and draw 3 cards. Again, there's similar issues to, yeah, but not if you're buying the cultist. But, like, I don't know, you know, you've got university and whatever, and I don't know why you have that in your deck, but whatever, you know, alter. I don't know. Maybe it can happen. It can come up. It doesn't never come up. But, like, it's like, get one of the Watchtowers, maybe 2, because it's still very easy to have too many. You draw them dead, and it's probably not as good as a silver when you draw it dead, because top decking isn't as useful as having the money, but yeah, getting one is at least usually good for Watchtower's case. Now let's move to the end of the episode, and when I say the end of the episode, I mean episode, and this is the other reason why I'm calling it an episode. We have a kingdom at the end. The way this is going to work is I'm going to read out the kingdom. This is going to be a game that I've actually played. So I'm not going to give my strategic thoughts on the kingdom, because, well, I've already played the game, so it's not exactly fair. I'm just going to read the kingdom out, and we're going to leave it to strategy for you, for everybody to talk about and discuss, leave comments, Discord, forums, wherever you want to do it. before the episode next week, we can talk about what we think is good, what we think is bad, different situations that might come up in the game. And then next week, hopefully I'll have had a chance. I don't know if this will actually work out or not, but hopefully I'll have had a chance to play some of the games with some of your suggestions if we get them fast enough. But at the very least, we can talk about your suggestions. We could talk about what you think in those scenarios. And I can also talk about the actual game that I played. So, yeah, here is the kingdom. Oh, and I guess at least this week, I am going to have a little bit of takes from Adam and Jake on what they would do here. They were kind enough to message me when I showed them the kingdom and tell me what they would think they would do. So I'm going to have their takes as well. But, okay, anyway, here is the kingdom. The kingdom is Vineyard, Stonemason, Ghost Town, Menagerie, Wandering Minstrel, Cultist, Duke, Hunting Party, Pillage, Rebuild, with the events Banquet and Wedding. Once more for our audio-only listeners, Vineyard, Stonemason, Ghost Town, Menagerie, Wandering Minstrel, Cultist, Duke, Hunting Party, Pillage, Rebuild, with the events Banquet and Wedding. I think this board is really interesting, and there's a lot of different little micro decisions, both in the opening and throughout the rest of the game, and ways to adapt depending on how the draws go, and that's about all I'm going to say in terms of my piece for it. There's a lot of things to think about. I'll be interested to hear what your feedback is. I guess I should also mention, not every week that I do this am I going to have a kingdom that particularly pertains to the topic that I covered. I may have just a random kingdom that I discuss at the end, just as a thing to tie us together. I don't know. We'll see how you guys like this. We'll see how it works out going forward. So here's Jake's thoughts. Jake's thoughts were that cultist money is the way to go at first, at least until what your opponent is doing. Ghost Town is great. He doesn't see rebuild factoring in. He's curious about pillage and thinks it's quite good on five once the ruin split has been settled, but he's not sure that it's better than gold or wedding. And he wants to say that he probably prefers just wedding in general on five, on six, or on seven. He doesn't think Duke's going to be relevant. Ruins are going to pile, and he's interested in stonemasoning, stonemason being other pile pressure in certain cases if you have a lead. So that's Jake's thoughts. Adam's thoughts are, let's see what Adam thinks of this. to clarify one of his initial questions, and in case you're not sure, there are no colonies and no shelters here, and obviously no heirlooms, so it's just the normal starting decks. So his thoughts are, I see Stonemason and Rebuild. Let me do this in the Adam voice. I see Stonemason and Rebuild, so this is going to be over P-fast. That alone doesn't get me away from Cultist, but I worry about Vineyard points at that point. So he worries about Vineyard points. Okay, I'm not going to do it in his voice. I'm not going to read verbatim either. He thinks he still goes for Cultist, though, because Cultist is Cultist, and he has Ghost Town to help him out. He thinks that on either a 3-4 or a 4-3, he's going to go for Silver Ghost Town as his opening, and on 5-2 or 2-5, he's going to go for Cultist and nothing. He's probably getting 2 or 3 Cultists before switching to other 5s, 3 only if he's not being contested on junking at all, and his opponent signals that their Vineyards aren't going to win them the game somehow. And then he's getting more Ghost Towns. He thinks he's getting more Ghost Towns over Silver at most points, and he's hoping to hit 7 for some delicious Stonemason value. At that point, he says it really depends on what his opponents are doing. He could see worlds where he gets Rebuild or 2. He could see worlds where he gets a bunch of Stonemasons and actions and goes for Vineyard slushes, but he doesn't really see Pillage, Duke, or Wandering Minstrel playing in at all. He's having trouble seeing worlds where those would be relevant cards. So that's their thoughts. You've heard my thoughts on I think this kingdom is interesting with a bunch of choices. We want to hear what you think. Please leave a comment in the comment section. Please mail me a pizza roll. Yeah. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've learned something. Looking forward to your discussion. And we'll see you next time on Making Luck, a Dominion podcast. You know, something I've always wondered is that saxophony version, is that actually Adam? Because I'm pretty sure Adam plays the saxophone. Is that actually him playing the saxophone? Is that like a recording of himself playing that? Or is it like some professional saxophonist is the cool way I want to say it, but maybe it's just saxophone. Anyway, is it a professional saxophone player playing it? Is it Adam playing it? Is it, you know, somebody else that, I don't know. Yeah. A Dominion Podcast! Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.